You are listening to The Weekend Chapter on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Thank you so much for joining us right here on Adventist World Radio, powered by the SID Media. It is still The Weekend Chapter on a Saturday. And right now, we're jumping straight into our movers and shakers. This evening, we got a lady who is a doctor. Yes, she is a doctor and she majors in psychiatry. So I'm talking about Dr. Mercy Saurumbe. Of course, look, every time you hear about psychiatry, of course, you get a little concerned, you get a little worried. But however, I think by the end of this interview, she's going to lay it bare and tell us what psychiatry is all about and how it helps us in our society. So let me take this opportunity to welcome her. Dr. Mercy Saurumbe, welcome to The Weekend Chapter right here on Adventist World Radio, SID Media.
Hi, Marvin. Thank you for having me, and hello, listeners.
All right, Doc. So, like I said, psychiatry is something that whenever it is mentioned, people think about people going crazy. But however, I think I would want you to lay it bare and tell us what is the difference between psychiatry and general counseling or psychology?
So psychiatry is a branch of medicine that focuses on mental health, and mental health being basically your emotions, thinking, and behavior. So a psychiatrist is a medical doctor who is trained to diagnose and treat mental health conditions. And this can usually, the treatment involves the use of medication, so prescribing medications, as well as offering psychotherapy or other different modalities. On the other hand, psychologist or counselor, so a psychologist is someone who administers psychotherapy, and these are psychological interventions, basically, or they also do psychological assessments. The fields are related in that we are all trying to address someone's mental health. So one of the major differences is that we also prescribe medication on top of the other things that can be done, whereas psychologists don't usually prescribe medications. But for most of our patients who have mental health challenges or suffer from mental conditions, they benefit from what we call a multidisciplinary team that includes a psychiatrist and a psychologist and other branches as well, including occupational therapists and social workers, depending on what the condition is. I don't know if that answers the question.
Thank you so much for making that very, very, very clear. So psychiatry, like I said, you know, people associate it with severe mental illness. So I wonder, is it only about serious conditions, or does it also deal with everyday mental health struggles?
Okay, so definitely psychiatry does treat serious illnesses, such as bipolar disorder or schizophrenia. But it's not restricted to that. Just like doctors in other specialties or your physicians, internal medicine physicians, who can treat serious conditions, but also can treat the general medical stuff. So when it comes to your mental health as well, we commonly meet other not so serious conditions, including sleep problems, anxiety, burnout, attention difficulties. So psychiatrists handle a wide variety or a wide range of mental health conditions, not just the severe illness. So just like you can go to the doctor for a flu, or go to the doctor for a pneumonia or for cancer, the physical illness can be paralleled to your mental illness as well. They are mild, moderate, and severe. So you'll find some illnesses can get better without even going to the doctor, just like some mental health conditions can resolve without going to the doctor, whereas others may need intervention for a short time, and others may need a long-term intervention similar to what happens with your general medical conditions, where you can have a flu that resolves, or you can have a pneumonia that needs antibiotics, or you can have a chronic condition like diabetes that needs you to be constantly seeing your healthcare provider for review and assessment and management. So in psychiatry, it's the same as well.
Thank you so much for shedding the much needed light on that particular subject. So in your own experience, Doc, what are some of the most common mental health challenges that people today are currently facing in everyday life?
So commonly, I think one of the commonest mental health conditions out there is what are called anxiety disorders, or anxiety in general. So it can, we all know what anxiety is, right? So we can experience anxiety in normal everyday life because of what we are faced with. But you will find that there are also people who struggle with anxiety disorders, and where it's now more than just that general feeling of anxiety, that is quite common. And some people think it's normal to be constantly anxious and worrying all the time. It's not. But some level of anxiety or worry is normal because it helps us, actually, it helps us function properly. So we have a lot of anxiety, especially now post-COVID. I think the anxiety levels really went up. There's also mood disorders such as depression. When you look at the world that we're living in right now, there are many factors that are contributing to depression. So these are quite common. And in general medical practice, these are very common presentations of mental health challenges. You will also find a lot of mental health challenges related to alcohol and substance abuse, especially alcohol use. I think it has been normalized in our society as an acceptable recreational drug, but there is quite a large number. I mean, there's a large number of people who are actually struggling and suffering the consequences of abuse of alcohol and other drugs. There's been a significant rise in illicit drugs such as crystal meth and cannabis use. So these are the common conditions that we meet in everyday life.
All right. So one thing that you mentioned, right, that is making me wonder is the issue of things that happened post-COVID. Like post-COVID, it seems like there's this challenge, there is a problem that has happened and that has befallen humanity, so to say. So I'm wondering, what is it that happened during COVID that made our mental health not to be so stable?
I think the pandemic, unfortunately, really did a number on us as a society. So one, the seriousness of the illness itself and the deaths that it caused affected us in a profound way. We all lost loved ones. And going through such a traumatic experience of losing loved ones itself has a negative impact on your mental health. So you'll find some people experience loss of multiple family members in a short period of time. So that will definitely affect you mentally. And then you will find the measures as well that were employed to contain the virus, the social distancing. We are by nature social creatures. That's how we were created. And so having it enhanced the isolation that others were feeling already, it increased levels of loneliness. You can imagine people in the diaspora, for example, who could no longer travel to see family, or you don't have family close by, and maybe your work was where you would get your social support system, and now you're not going to work, you're working from home. People had a lot of our usual coping mechanisms were also kind of taken away from us during that time. And then, of course, there was an increase in social media, which was a good thing in a way, because at least we could still remain connected that way. But then people adopted unhealthy ways of use of social media. Now there's so much more use of social media at the expense of face-to-face interaction, and relationships then tend to suffer because of the constantly being on social media. So you'll find that people who spend a lot of time, excessive amounts of time on social media, are at high risk of developing anxiety and depression. Studies have shown, especially among young people, adolescents, teenagers, there's a correlation there with very high use and anxiety and depression levels. So I think those are some of the things that contribute. That's how COVID could have contributed as well to. And then you have the effects of our mental health, and then you have the effects of the virus itself. So the virus, people who suffered, for instance, from long COVID, complain of fatigue, mental slowing, memory issues. These are some of the complications that are coming out, or that studies are showing that people who were infected with COVID and survived are struggling with.
Eish, now that's hectic. Now that's hectic right there. So look, Doc, looking at what is happening in the world right now, there's so much happening. Life is pretty much stressful. Rumors of wars happening, all these things, they're adding to the stress that we already have in this fast-paced world. So from a psychiatric perspective, what are the biggest contributors? Should I say other contributors of stress in this modern life?
So I think the fact that we have access to so much information, so information overload, when you think about how, you know, everything is at your fingertip, you know, you want to hear about the wars that are going on all over the world. You can literally spend the whole day listening or watching those things, and that can have a significant impact. Whereas, you know, some years ago, because we didn't have the internet or it wasn't so accessible to everyone, you just wait for the news. And when the news comes up, it tells you this is happening and that's it. And the rest of your time, you're filling your time with, you know, other things. Now you have access to information. Of course, information is good, but if that is the majority of information that you are, you know, taking in, focusing on what's going wrong everywhere in the world, it definitely tends to affect you more. So we struggle a lot in terms of balancing, you know, being informed as to world events, but at the same time, it can crowd out other things and make us even more anxious. You know, before, when the world wasn't so connected, you would hear about it, but you wouldn't be so worried about the wars that are happening in another part of the world.
True.
Now it affects us even more. Another thing I think is social comparison. Again, I think we can give this to social media. So you'll find that now, I mean, there's always been peer pressure, right? But now there's peer pressure from people who live, you know, in another part of the world, following people from, all over. Now you're trying to keep up not only with your circle, but the circle around everywhere in the world. And people tend to show the best, you know. It's we tend to forget sometimes that what we see on social media is actually not real. It's not real life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can feel like, you know, you're lagging behind or you're not living the way, you know. Social media has got lots of trends and, you know, things that people do, and it becomes very flashy. Also, even in terms of image, people use filters and all sorts of things. And for especially young people who are still trying to form their identity, that can be a lot of pressure, and it can be very difficult to navigate that kind of life. There's also, you know, the pressure of when you post on social media, now you're exposed to, you're not just exposed to the bullies in your neighborhood, you're exposed to bullies from all over the world. Anyone can have a comment concerning your life or concerning what you look like, or, you know. So all these things expose us and can negatively impact our mental health as well. And, you know, there's pressure. I mean, people will now say, people in their 20s, because of social media, others are, you know, making so much money, and you look at yourself in the economy that we're in, you know, there's a lot of pressure. It's a fast-paced world that we're living in. So it's very difficult. And because we have this access all the time, I mean, you can be on your screen at night, you know, and that is actually taking away from some of the things that are supposed to be protecting us, like getting good sleep. So you're not sleeping well because you're constantly scrolling on social media. And when you don't rest, you're not giving your brain that time to recover. And so you're more vulnerable to mental health challenges as well because of spending so much time on social media.
Eish, now that's sad. Now that's really sad. I guess maybe this thing of keeping up with the Joneses is really giving us a whole lot of stress.
And I think our young people are especially vulnerable. I mean, they've done studies where they show that the same kind of the brain circuits that are affected, for example, when you take drugs, are very similar to the brain circuits that light up, or the regions that light up or affected when someone is on social media and gets likes and things like that. You get this dopamine hit, or dopamine is the chemical in the brain that's responsible for reward. And so you're supposed to usually get dopamine from things like, you know, eating a good meal, achieving, you know, doing something great. And now you get it from likes on the internet. And those that dopamine hit can be quite high, and you want more of that. But next time you're not going to get those likes, you know. And what are you going to do now? Now you're at the mercy of, you know, people you don't even know. So I think it's a really big challenge, and some of it can actually lead to addiction, where people fail to control their social media use. They have this, you know, fear of missing out and can't be away from internet. Some will start getting irritable, struggle sleeping, become anxious because they can't access social media.
Ish, I guess maybe that is why now we've got this increasing thing whereby people feel mentally exhausted even when they haven't done much, like physically. Seems like fatigue is becoming so common, isn't it?
Yes, because our minds are active all the time, you know, even though you're sitting on a desk or you're in bed or whatever, but your mind is constantly active, constantly making decisions, constantly trying to, you know, work things out. And so you will find that you can experience fatigue even though you haven't, you know, exerted yourself physically. Also, another thing that can happen is that anxiety itself and depression can cause loss of energy, where you can actually feel physically tired even though you haven't done anything. You have no energy, you have the ability to actually get up, that drive, because remember we said some of these conditions, as well as some of this exposure to social media, affects your reward pathway. And that reward pathway is part of, you know, what gives you that drive and motivation to get up, to get going and do what you need to do. So that mental fatigue is definitely there. You're trying to solve problems, you're worrying about the future, anxiety is so high, you're thinking about this and that. So you will struggle. And also, again, I go back to some lifestyle things that also happen, where we are sleeping less, probably not eating as healthy as we're supposed to be. So we're also not nourishing our brains enough. We are not giving our brains enough time to rest and reset in order to have enough energy to process what we need to process. So probably those are some of the contributors as well to this fatigue.
Okay, so you did say that if we're talking about anxiety, we're not just talking about one getting worried in jail. Okay. So like, for example, if I'm worried about rent, you know, that's just worry. It's not really anxiety. So what are the signs and symptoms whereby we can now say, now this is anxiety?
Okay. So anxiety is the body's natural alarm system, you know, that tells you that something is wrong, you need to do something about it. So it usually triggers, like if there's danger, if you detect danger, you don't, in order to be protected, you don't want to first say, okay, how do I think? Should I run or should I what? Automatically, your body will switch on that fight or flight response, where it will get your heart beating, it will send blood rushing to the muscles, so that if you need to fight or flee, you're able to do that. Blood is diverted from your digestive system, for example. You know, you may start to sweat or things like that. You're hypervigilant. And that is protective. I mean, if a lion were to jump into studio, for example, you know, you don't want to first have to think about, you know, what to do. You just want to run, you know, it's protective that way. And the brain doesn't differentiate between emotional danger, physical danger, whatever type of danger, the response is the same. So in the short term like that, it's very useful to have that anxiety response. It's protective. But when anxiety disorders develop, when that alarm system becomes overactive or it's constantly on and there's no real threat, that no apparent threat that you can see. So there's no lion that you're supposed to run away from. Maybe there is worry about, you know, finances or things like that. But if you're constantly worrying about it and constantly thinking about that to such an extent that your heart is always beating, your stress response is always active, it then has effects on other body systems as well, where you then start to feel that fatigue because it's energy consuming, you know, to be in that state. Your brain is now not focusing on other things. It's focusing on this imminent danger, even though that imminent danger is not there. So an anxiety disorder now is that response that is out of proportion to whatever danger that probably could have been there. Or you now constantly worry about things that normally should, but the worry is exaggerated, it's constant, and it's affecting how you function. So you're struggling to sleep now because you're overthinking, your muscles are always tense. So you can actually end up having, you know, complaints of headaches, you know, tension headaches, muscle aches, backache, neck pain, because your system is always activated. You're in that constant worry state. So those are some of the symptoms. You may even have panic attacks sometimes, where it feels like a heart attack. Basically, you struggle to breathe. You may have some chest tightness. Your heart is beating very fast. Your palms are sweaty and tremor. If you're hyperventilating, some people may end up fainting because of that. And you'll find a lot of the times people can go to the doctor and say, you know, I've got this pain or I've got this chest tightness or things like that. And they do physical examinations and tests and they're unable to find anything physically wrong with you. It could be actually anxiety that is triggering the symptoms.
H, so if you are experiencing any of those, you know, you are constantly worried all the time, I guess maybe you need to, you know, take some precautions or maybe try to air out your grievances, talk to somebody, you know, that way maybe you can get help. All right. So, Doc, as we conclude, I guess maybe what would you like to say to our listeners so that they can remember to protect their mental and emotional well-being? I understand we're living in a very, very, very difficult world. All kinds of things, relationships problems, financial problems. And on top of that, you've got these global pandemics that are coming in and things like that. You know, you sometimes you get to wonder and you say to yourself, you know, our parents had it better. So what would you say to our listeners right now as far as their mental and emotional well-being is concerned?
Okay. So I think there are actually a number of things that we can do to protect our mental health. One, it's being aware that we're all vulnerable to mental health challenges. No one is immune. And especially if you've got a close relative who has struggled with a mental health issue, there might be some genetic predisposition to some of these conditions, such as anxiety and depression. So being aware that we are all vulnerable to mental illness will enable us to be a bit more proactive in terms of protecting our mental health and also seeking help when we need it. So some things that we can do: regular physical activity, exercise is very important. Studies continue to show that exercise is not only important for our physical well-being, but also for our mental health well-being. Some studies have gone on to show that regular exercise can be actually as effective as medication or psychotherapy in treating some mild to moderate cases of depression, for example. So regular physical activity will protect your body, your heart, and your mind as well. Studies have actually shown that you release, there's a chemical in the brain that is like the fertilizer, or the one that nourishes our brain cells. And that is released when we sleep, but it's also released when we exercise. So it's very good for us to exercise. That number two, then go, we need to protect our sleep. We need good sleep habits. Aim for that 7 to 8 hours of sleep. I know other people may feel like, no, maybe it's laziness to sleep that long, but it's actually protective. There's a reason why God gave us sleep. We need to protect our brains during sleep. That's when we consolidate memories. That's when our body goes into repair. We repair our muscles. And the things that we learned during the day are consolidated while we sleep. So sometimes, yes, some people are very busy, but you may realize that if you sleep better, your efficiency when you're awake increases, so that you might be able to do more work in a shorter amount of time. So sleep is very important for our physical health and our mental health as well. We need to manage our use of social media and news exposure. Like I said, we need to be intentional about what we are watching, because that has a big impact on our mental health. And we need to talk about our problems. We need good relationships with loved ones, whether it's friends or relatives. But we need to be in relationships where we are dependable and can depend on others as well. And we need, ultimately, we need to trust in God. If anything I've learned is that when you look at the events of the world and you don't read your Bible, or you don't believe in God and what he has said about where this world is going and what's happening, then definitely you can't help but be in mental distress. But everything that is happening right now, God has already told us about it, and he encourages us and he tells us that he's in control, and he is in control. We have very little control, and I guess that's part of where the anxiety comes from. But if you can rest in the assurance that the one who is in control is actually a loving father who gave his life for us, I mean, that that is definitely very protective when it comes to our mental health. So my encouragement is that we, each one of us, seeks a personal relationship with God as well, not just, you know, be a churchgoer, but actually take time to get to know the God who loved you so much to die for you.
Powerful charge right there. Well, look, we can talk about exercise, we can talk about counseling, we can talk about every other thing that we can recommend, but it is always good for us to rely on our Creator. Let's read the scriptures. Let's have faith in a higher power, and that actually helps us a lot. So look, powerful words from Dr. Mercy Saurombe. She has been telling us all about psychiatry, and also something to do with our mental and emotional well-being. So let me take this opportunity to thank her for coming through. Dr. Mercy, thank you so much for coming through to the Weekend Chapter.
Thank you so much, Marvin, for having me. I'm really glad I could share what I had today.
The pleasure is all mine. So that was Dr. Mercy Saurombe. She is a psychiatrist, and she's been telling us a whole lot of things that could help us, especially to do with our mental well-being. So stay with us right here on Adventist World Radio, powered by the SID Media.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.